This is Out of Line After Hours with John McElroy and Gary Vasilash, episode 406 for January 26 of 2018. CES, NAIAS, and issues with Tesla's Model 3. Watch Out of Line After Hours live at outofline.tv every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 p.m. Pacific. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Out of Line in iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube.
Out of Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion, and by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
All right, we're back in the studio doing Out of Line After Hours. Gary, I got to tell you, I've been jonesing, man. I've been missing this show.
It's been a long time, but it's not like we haven't been busy while we've not been here.
It's been crazy.
We'll discuss.
And we'll get into that in a minute, but we got to let everybody know that Mark Phelan, the auto critic from the Detroit Free Press, is here in the studio. Great having you, Mark.
Thank you, John.
And Todd Laza from Automobile Magazine making a repeat appearance.
Thanks, John.
So great having you here, too, Todd. So, yeah, Gary, where do we start?
We should start CES because that was where we were first.
Okay. So at the very beginning of the year, that's the first automotive event that kicked off 2018. The formerly known as Consumer Electronics Show, just CES.
They dropped it? The initials don't really stand for anything anymore?
Yeah, because consumer electronics, they felt limited
then. I didn't realize that.
You know, as we'll get into in the discussion now, when you start talking about autonomous cars and stuff, you know, is that really consumer electronics? Yes, yeah. Not really. Anyway, they've dropped that. They just call it CES now.
So the big point of contention with CES is that the following week, the Detroit Auto Show, or the North American International Auto Show, occurs. And now you maintain, John, that CES is eating the lunch of...
I think it's hurting the Detroit Show. I don't think there's any question about it. There were a number of automakers. Hyundai and Kia come to mind right off the top of my head. Nissan. I'd have to go through the whole list, but a number of automakers chose to unveil either production models and/or concept cars at CES, several of which never made it to the Detroit show. So, you bet. I think CES is hurting NAIAS.
Well, but Nissan and Toyota Lexus showed concept cars at Detroit. Were these the same ones at CES?
All right, I looked it up. He's sort of right. Okay, so Toyota...
I hate when they look it up.
Okay, so Toyota showed a concept, the e-Palette concept, which is basically a little...
it's a box
shuttle,
on wheel.
Shuttle bus type thing, right?
Right.
And so what the purpose of this thing is, it'll be an electric autonomous vehicle that is also going to be, they're partnering with a number of companies, including Pizza Hut and so on, to develop this, and they'll have an infrastructure, and they'll be rolling around with this, and, you know, Akio is there.
It's amazing how much is being put into pizza delivery.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's actually...
I
had the opportunity to have dinner with a guy who was running Pizza Hut, and I said to him, I said, you know, are you guys doing this because Domino's is working with Ford? And he says, no. We've been trying to get autonomous pizza delivery vehicles for a long time. I'm like, why?
You're going to put so many high school kids out of jobs.
He said that...
And of course, they're not safe drivers, relatively speaking.
He said they can't get enough drivers. And he said it's a real problem in terms of hiring drivers, and then when they need surge capacity, they certainly can't get it. So you think about Super Bowl or something like that. So they'd have this fleet of autonomous vehicles that they could send out.
Domino's will tell you is the cost of the driver drives up the cost of the pizza.
Sure.
Wow. So they can cut the cost of the pizza and deliver it.
What is very clever is if you think about it, so Ford was showing, a Fusion that... We had the pizza delivery.
Yeah, right.
Was that Domino's? Because didn't Chevy do a Sonic that was developed with
Domino's
a little while ago?
Yeah, we had that.
So Domino's is two kind of me.
The EXP or the XC.
Yeah. Okay.
So this e-Palette thing, they were saying that basically you could have the pizza oven in the vehicle. So it would be cooking the pizza while it's driving to your place.
It's an autonomous pizza stand.
Now, wait a minute. Yeah. I think they should start with replacing Ubers and Lyft drivers first, because then they could get the Uber and Lyft drivers to go work for Domino's and deliver
there
pizzas.
You go. All right, so there was a Toyota e-Pilot. Hyundai showed the production Nexo fuel cell vehicle, which will be coming out later this year. And then the only other vehicle that I was able to find was the Byton.
It's the next Chinese Tesla wannabe.
It was this year's Faraday Future. It was a couple of former BMW guys got together, one of whom spent his career largely in China. And so they decided that they needed to develop a vehicle. And the guy told me, he goes, and we decided it had to be made in China.
But see, that's not a concept car. That's a concept company, which was what Faraday was. I would give the win, at least from a car guy point of view, even with just three concepts, to the Detroit show compared with those CES concepts.
Yeah, and I would say, I'm sorry, Gary.
Well, it's only one. Please, one concept, two production cars.
I thought Kia had something there.
But I think the fact that you can't remember it sort of makes my point, which is that, and I will admit, I did not go to CES because I was knee-deep in getting ready for Detroit. But looking at the coverage coming out of CES from a distance, I didn't see anything that looked like it would even have been a top 15 headline coming out of Detroit. Yeah. So while it would be nice maybe to have a little bit of extra stuff just so some of the stands were packed with things, I don't feel like the Detroit show suffered in any really meaningful way. And I feel like CES, it seems like when there's a breakthrough that you can tell people about, that's an electronics breakthrough. That's a great show to do it. First voice recognition, first time an autonomous car drives across the country. Mm-hmm. But in between breakthroughs, it seems like there's a lot of kind of one turn of the dial to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like Mark, I didn't go this year. I went last year, so I did my time. And I agree. I mean, there was this flurry of autonomous car technology and similar things, connected car, V2 car and all that, 2, 3, 4 years ago, that seemed to make CES the next big thing for car shows. And that made CES big enough to kick around Detroit and move it back a week, because CES moved back a week.
But I was just going to say, I don't know that it was necessarily because of a conflict, because they always have been sort of paired CESs before,
right.
and they move through the calendar kind of in sync. So next year, both of them will be closer to New Year's, I would imagine.
Okay, but pretty much the same dates.
Is it really?
Yeah, right.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
See, I've heard that CES kind of wanted to move away from New Year's a little bit.
It did.
Right?
It did, and next year's dates are almost the same as this year's dates.
That's interesting, because this year was much later than the Detroit dealers like, because they lost the public day for Martin Luther King Day, which is a huge day for them normally because of school and government holidays.
Right. And made Martin Luther King Day the main press day, and I think there's a little sensitivity to that for good reason, too, I think.
Well, sure. Look, Ford and General Motors said, no way in hell are we going to do events on Martin Luther King Day. So Chevy launched
Silver Is that
Silver
the excuse Rock? They're that, using for doing their stuff the weekend
absolutely.
Before?
Absolutely.
That's fascinating.
That's
I hadn't
right.
heard that.
No, that's why Chevy introduced the Silverado on Saturday, and I told everybody I hate working on the weekend. And then Sunday, and I told Ford the same thing, I hate working on the weekend.
Could have done it on Tuesday.
I thought
Jeep
they were
Joe Chevy on Tuesday. But to get back to CES, because you're also right, also right that Nissan was there in a big way. Carlos Ghosn gave a keynote address, and Ford was there in a big way because Jim Hackett.
Did you read Jim Hackett's address?
I watched Jim Hackett's address.
Oh, my God. how bad was it in person?
It was all butterflies and bunny rabbits.
He went out of his way to prove that he's not a car guy, which he clearly proved from the address. And
for people who
Edward
didn't see
Niedermeyer
it, basically
tweeted that, good on a car CEO for saying he didn't grow up with cars. And I responded to Edward, who I like and admire. I said, now I can't wait for the first Silicon Valley CEO to say he or she didn't grow up a computer nerd.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
And for people who didn't see it, he was basically talking about the need for smart streets and other infrastructure.
Right. Yeah.
And it was as exciting, I thought, as exciting as that sounds.
And as new as it sounds.
So you didn't watch the, you gotta watch it, because
he does electrify the screen.
Well, so behind him, there's this city, and it's constantly with vehicles and morphing, and it's very interesting to see that. But he reminded me very much of and as this image here shows of Jim Hapakek at the CEO of Ford, reminded me of Mr. Rogers from Mr. Rogers'
the
Neighborhood.
Sweater.
Because he's sitting down, he's not standing up at all. I mean, he walks on stage, sits down, and then he leaves stage, and then Marcy Klaghorn comes out, and Jim Farley comes out, and
there a talk?
Don Butler comes out, and there could have been, and. It is fascinating that it wasn't so much about vehicles at all. Farley talked about vehicles a little bit, and basically
it's all the smart city stuff, city of the future, blah blah blah. I don't see a business case for the Ford Motor Company. They're talking all this pie in the sky stuff. Meanwhile, their profitability's going down. Wall Street's hammering their stock. They can't show anybody how they're going to make money on all this stuff.
Yeah, they don't want to be a car company anymore. They call themselves a mobility company, and they're really a truck company.
Yeah.
And we'll get into the trucks in a minute.
So I looked at this. So there's this guy, Steven Sinofsky, who used to be the president of Microsoft Windows Division. Okay, so the guy's got some CES credibility, and now he's a partner at Andreessen Horowitz, which, you know, is a Silicon Valley-based venture capitalist firm. And so he wrote a long piece on CES, and there's one section in this long piece he wrote about autos and transportation. And he writes, even though autos take up about 10% of the show exhibition space, it seems like it takes up about 50% of the show bandwidth.
Yeah.
So people are talking about this. But then he says, CES and autos are just a weird combination. I believe most of what we are seeing at the show is positioning from the big car companies and major supply chain providers and not about really making cars and changing things. The attendees are not the right people, and the car companies really don't do business at CES the way that the typical consumer electronics people do. And then to speak to Ford, he says, Ford, not to single them out, of course, but they basically had a vision presentation going on all day that spent a lot of time essentially saying, quote, transportation is messed up. Yep, no argument. This is backed up by Ford announcing a bunch of new internal combustion engine pickup trucks and a new Mustang last week. So it's just like, yeah. Right. Here we are at CES talking about the bright, shiny future. And, oh, by the way, look at the bullet Mustang.
Well, and Ford does seem to think that the way to improve their image with people is by talking more about autonomy and electric vehicles. Does anybody buy that? I mean, those are things you have to have some work on, but is a company's image that important?
I don't think they're trying to change the image with the public. They're trying to change that image with Wall Street, which, after all, rewards Tesla for not making any money, right?
I feel like trying to copy Tesla, I feel like there's only one Tesla.
See, Mark, I would think that Ford's doing the right thing if it could explain to me and the investment community, here's our plan of how to make money off this. They talk about, we have this chariot thing, you know, this ride-hailing van, and we're going to have an autonomous ride-sharing service by 2021, and that's it. And meanwhile, I think GM is being much more specific, mm-hmm. and showing how they're integrating this all into their planning, how they've got this architecture that's going to be able to be electrified and autonomized, if there's such a term. And so Wall Street's buying it. GM stock is up strong. Everybody thinks the world of Mary Barra, and Ford just seems to be floundering. They're saying the right things, but they're not explaining how they're going to make money off this.
Right. And GM, GM has been more specific, and as a matter of fact, when they announced that 20 or 22 additional EVs by early 2020s, their stock price did bump up quite a bit. well, Ford still flounders.
Well, and I feel like GM is benefiting, but they're benefiting more from a concrete plan and concrete movement on the product side, too. I don't think we can lose sight of the fact that, I mean, it's, you know, 2018 and Ford still doesn't have a midsize pickup. I mean, that seems to be, you know, indicative of a kind of a lack of ability to execute with the traditional business as well.
I totally agree, Mark. You know, look, they made a big stink out of the Ranger. It's still a year away. It doesn't go into production until the very end of this year. The EcoSport, which, again, you know, compact crossover, they're late to the party. It's been on sale for a month. They haven't advertised or marketed or told anybody about this.
Someone had it pointed out to me on the Ford showroom floor at NAIA.
And isn't that telling? It's on sale, but they haven't asked any of us if we would like to look at it and evaluate it and tell the world about it.
Today or tomorrow, they're doing this big thing in New York City with all the social media people. And they sent me the release. There's not one mention of anything about the vehicle except that it's got Android Auto and Apple CarPlay and blah, 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 that connectivity. And there's nothing else about the vehicle in it.
That's because we did the show in L.A. 2 years ago on the EcoSport. So we gave all the information.
Well, we gave the information, but, you know, here it is. We got a picture of it up now. But what's going on at Ford where, you're right, Gary, a year ago plus, Now everybody's forgotten about it. They put it in the showroom. They don't tell anybody because all the attention's on the Ranger, which isn't going to be here for another year.
And then the Bronco is another year out after that. And is there any evidence that people are crying out for a vehicle like the Bronco anyway?
Well, just take a look at Jeep sales.
Yeah, but Ford is like a whole special case.
Oh, I know, but...
All right, I got a theory about what Ford is doing.
Okay, let's hear it.
Okay, so they made an announcement today about they've reorganized their mobility services. They bought a couple of other companies that are cloud-based services. I think that what we're going to see is two parts of Ford. One part of Ford is the truck company, because that's what they're selling, right? I mean, and a few Mustangs, but but by and large, they're selling trucks. The other is going to be a service company, and they're going to have a stream of revenue coming from services. So, for example...
Jack Nasser.
Well, I mean, you were talking about Chariot. So I was looking, so they opened this thing with Chariot, and I was looking in San Francisco. What you basically do is you buy a monthly pass or a weekly pass or unlimited rides. And you know, so here's a revenue stream that is certain because they, you know, you're buying these things. So Ford will make money from that. As part of their announcement today, they're going to start non-emergency medical transportation. Tapping into the growing healthcare transportation market, Ford Mobility will expand its non-emergency medical transportation operation from a Southeast Michigan pilot with Beaumont Health into a full business serving multiple medical systems. So basically, what are they going to be doing? They're going to be picking up people, older people.
I like this because now you're starting to tell me how you're going to make money off this
stuff. And it's going to be money off of services. Right. It's not going to be money off of selling cars.
Yeah, true. And by the way, when you call it a truck company, and when I call it a truck company, I maintain that, we know that they're going to basically get out of the sedan business, just as Fiat Chrysler has. But if you look at their SUV lineup, including the late-to-the-party EcoSport, or EcoSport, I have to pronounce it a certain way, a lot of those models that should be key sales models, the Explorer, the Escape, and so on, are getting way overripe compared with competition. It's all about the pickup truck and, you know, maybe the Transit vans.
Well, and it's all about execution and the ability to make decisions within the company,
right,
I think.
Right.
Yeah. Go on.
And just one thing to add, Gary, internally at Ford, they're not calling it services, they're calling it mobility. And they even got a P&L line item. And they're starting to, not with any hard numbers, but show that they're investing in mobility, which they explain as one of the reasons why their profitability is down, because they're putting money into that.
And because I've been hammering Ford pretty hard, if I can say one good thing about them, at their presentation at the auto show, at the very end after the Mustang Bullitt and that whole wonderful family story, Jim Farley almost, by the way, dropped the fact that there's a hybrid F-150 in 2020 and a pure battery electric sports car that he said would be called the Mach 1.
Correct.
And that name has not been completely set in concrete within Ford. Value of its names better than Ford. And the fact that they're willing to tie two names like that to those two technologies made me take it more seriously than I had until that moment.
No, you're right. Ford's a very strong company. Their balance sheet is a fortress. I mean, they've got like $27 billion in cash and securities and like $37 billion in liquidity. So they can spend money if they need to. But you're also right in saying, man, is their product line lame from an age standpoint. Yeah. They got the oldest stuff out there. And the fact that they're doing as well as they are in North America shows me just how good the Ford dealer body is.
Yeah.
Ford dealer body, you know, as they've said before, they can sell ice cubes to Eskimos. They're really good at moving the metal.
And that kind of that kind of willingness to let things age has, to me, been a long-standing problem at Ford. If you look at the 70s, 80s, 90s with, Taurus and Focus and Lincoln LS all launching really well, but then they get very old very quickly.
Look all the way back to the Model T.
Exactly.
It's what the company does. Yeah, they build a great car and they let it age into irrelevance.
But, you know, you got to be competitive and you got to respond to the competition. I can't believe how long it took them to redo the Expedition and the Navigator. They have, like, ceded that section of the market to General Motors, which is making a fortune. I think GM has what?
It's 70%.
70% of the full-size SUV seg. That's criminal. How, as Ford Motor Company,
and Navigator
get away with that?
The luxury SUV market and then became irrelevant in it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So. And now it's the North American utility.
And the new one is great, I will absolutely say.
And it got
my vote.
Yeah.
And it was also a free press truck of the year.
There's a nice, another nice thing to be said about Ford. Anyway.
The Navigator.
The Navigator, yes.
Navigator.
Lincoln Navigator.
And names. The Nautilus. No more MKX or whatever they call that.
Yeah.
They're going back to names.
Right.
Which is good.
Yes.
Great first step.
Anyway.
So what else, Gary?
Well, okay, to close up the CES discussion, I mean, so It strikes me that it has become less of an automotive show in terms of cars, you know, sheet metal that people will come and see, versus technologies, whether it's you know, a cloud-based system that you're communicating with, or it's the suppliers that are there in a big way, whether it's Continental or Bosch or Aptiv, however that's said. I mean, because they did a very clever thing. So the company formerly known as Delphi,
yeah,
partnered with Lyft, and we're offering people rides in autonomous vehicles at CES. Now, there was a safety driver on board, and there was a person from the company on board. But essentially, they were showing, hey, we're Aptiv, we've got this technology suite that we will then, you know, sell to automakers that they can integrate into their vehicles. And so it struck me that, remember when the SAE World Congress was like huge in Detroit and it was full, you know, it was almost as big as the auto show in terms of filling Cobo Hall with companies and people from all over the world were coming here, and now it's begun to shrink. So in some ways, it's almost that CES is what used to be the SAE World Congress.
And really, a little bit of always that way. It wasn't ever about a new Audi showing up. It was about a new Audi showing up on its own with no one at the wheel, right? I mean, it's always been that sort of thing. I think maybe it grew more automotively because of all the attention that Silicon Valley has paid to the automotive industry over the last 10 or so years. I mean, you know, everything from just Android, the Android app and the Apple CarPlay to, you know, Google working on autonomous cars and so on.
Well, it's even more than that, because if you're a car company, your stock multiple stinks. It's just it. The Wall Street doesn't care about car companies. If you're perceived as a tech company, well, like Tesla, you can lose money all day long, and they love you. Your stock price goes up.
As long as you don't have your own factories.
Same with suppliers. So, yeah, Delphi said, hey, our multiples aren't going anywhere, even though they had some of the best multiples in the supplier industry. So they said, we got to split this company up, and we're going to leave the old stuff behind, and we'll still call that Delphi, and we're going to take the new sexy stuff, and we're going to call that Aptiv. And you're starting to see all kinds of suppliers do this. Continental is probably going to go through a restructuring. We're assuming something like this is going to happen. Bosch, last year, sold off its starters and alternators to some Chinese company. So everybody wants to take anything that's got to do with the internal combustion engine and just let
put it over there.
Put it over there. Don't look at that. Look at us. We're the sexy new stuff and give us great stock multiples.
And companies that you wouldn't think were within a mile of autonomous features are rebranding themselves as key autonomous partners, too.
Right. Auto Leave, another one that just split up. I mean, we're going to see a whole lot of this stuff. Mm. Well, hey, great time to take a quick break. Got to give a shout out to one of our sponsors. We got a lot more coming back. Dr. Data, we got some inside stuff on the Tesla Model 3 that we're going to get to and other topics. But first, a shout out to our friends at Lear.
Lear Kinexus offers a parental controls application with geofencing that sends notifications regarding driving behavior and location, including curfew alerts, acceleration alerts, and speed alerts. All delivered to a smartphone application that includes vehicle location, driver notifications, and a report card of driving history, including notifications when predefined geographic boundaries are crossed. For more information, visit Lear.com.
Okay, we're back. And with the drum roll, this is the part of the show where it's time for Dr. Data.
All right, so this one is going to be incredibly easy. And because I figure, you know, we'll start off the first of the year and we'll just
give us a
chance.
This is like the Monday New York Times crossword.
It's just going to, this is going to be like the family circle version of the New York Times Sunday or Monday crossword. It'll be very easy. So, Carmen, could you please bring up the first slide, please? Okay, so 1.4 million drivers. What could 1.4 million drivers be?
I will guess the number of baby boomers turning 80.
It's a frightening thing, but you're wrong. Todd.
Oh, man, this is the family circle version?
Yeah.
My gosh. 1.4 million drivers are, I would just say the opposite, millennials entering the auto market that previously said they weren't interested in cars.
Less frightening, but also wrong.
Okay.
John is looking at the back.
I'm looking at the background, and it's all blurry, but I see a lot of pink.
Yes, you do.
And pink reminds me of the Lyft mustache, so that's got to be the number of Lyft drivers.
And you're right.
Okay. Oh, God.
Wow.
So I thought it was very interesting. So Lyft put out a thing, and they do this every year, an economic impact report. And they're talking, and it's astonishing how many Lyft drivers there are. So here are some other.
You should call it an impact report, by the way, if you're driving.
Yeah.
That's a good funny point. They ought to take that into account. Yeah. But there are some other. So the drivers earned $3.6 billion last year, and that's not including tips. That they gave 375 million rides. Lyft passengers saved 92 million travel hours compared to other transportation. That's a time savings of $3.2 billion. Now this is where I think that it becomes even more interesting. And as we were talking about, you know, Ford providing mobility services and you know, so service becomes a thing. So, you know, they queried the people who were taking these rides. 50% used their car less because of Lyft. 21% used public transit more because they can connect to it via Lyft. 25% say owning a personal vehicle is less important to them now.
Yeah.
25% are saying that. And 83% would request a ride in a self-driving vehicle when the service is available.
What percent of those 1.4 million also drive for Uber?
Good chunk of them. Good chunk.
I mean, there's so much crossover there.
There is.
Right?
Yep.
But I mean,
really
this 25% of the people saying that owning a car is less important to them.
Fascinating.
And if you think about, like, this is Lyft and Uber is bigger, which means that, you know, conceivably there are more people. And if they were also 25%, I mean, you begin to chip away
at car sales.
And then, you know, and as we, you know, project this year will not be as good in terms of car sales as last year was. So if this accelerates, I mean, it could have some real implications for our car companies going forward. So maybe you just want to sell trucks, Mustangs, and then have the services over here.
That's right. Hey, jumping topics here. I want to run a little video clip here in a second. There's a guy here in town. He's been on After Hours a number of times. We have him here every year, and we'll get him back, too. Sandy Monroe of Monroe & Associates. They do a whole lot of stuff. One of the parts of his business is tearing down cars and figuring out how it was engineered and what it cost to engineer it. I was just there yesterday, and Carmen was with me. We shot some stuff. But I just wanted to tease a little bit of it because Sandy took me around this car, and there's some design issues with the Model 3. And just wanted to show you guys this. Carmen, let's roll that clip. And we should point out one other thing, too, here. There's in case of an accident, you can't get in under the trunk. There's another place to cut the car open, to cut a cable. But you take it from there, Sandy.
I don't know how to do that, and I don't think I'd want to do it. So here we're looking at cutting the cable, probably using a saw.
So you got to cut through the body here.
Yeah, but where? That's the thing. It says you're supposed to cut. There's supposed to be something going on here. How do I know which thing? And it tells me I've got to have a buzzsaw, but... I mean, where is there? I don't know. Personally, if I was in the fire department, I doubt very much if I would be the guy.
And if you're in the fire department and the trunk's closed, do you even know to go here to find this emergency cut-through?
Yeah. I'm certain that lawyers are going to have a field day with this kind of stuff.
Yeah, so that's just one example.
So what is the... I don't understand.
Okay, if a car gets in an accident and now you need to use the jaws of life or anything like that, you got to cut the power to the car. And Toyota was the first to step forward when the Prius came out, and they trained like 10,000 emergency personnel all across the country, firemen and all that kind of stuff. Yep. On if you got to cut into this car first, here's how you disconnect all the power. And we have more video that shows to get under the hood is where you're supposed to do it. But what if you can't get in under the hood? Here's another place. Well, you got to take a circular saw and go through the window in the sheet metal. Then you got to cut a wire. But if you don't even know about this, it's a real danger. And the warning label, as I showed, if the hatch is closed and you just walk up, you don't know where to go into this thing. And as Sandy points out later in the video, in an accident, seconds count. You know, if there's a fire going on in the car, if somebody's badly hurt, you know, seconds count. And to try to figure out, how do I safely, as an EMT, get into this thing? There's some real issues.
Is that a steel car or an aluminum car?
I believe it's aluminum.
Because I know that, you know, with more and more auto companies using advanced high-strength steels, that the traditional jaws of life don't work so very well on those sorts of things. And so
they can't cut through it.
So the steel industry has had to go out, just, you know, as you're saying, that Toyota did with the Prius, and to train, you know, emergency responders how to get into these vehicles that are so safe because it's, you know, the material's so strong.
Well, we'll be showing clips of this all next week on Autoline Daily. We're still putting this thing together and all, but I just wanted to give you guys a taste and the viewers a taste of some of the things. And when he does his complete teardown, we'll have to get Sandy in here because I know there's a lot of interest in that car.
Very interesting stuff. Yeah, I'd like to see more of that. Hey, if I could make a little point, just kind of pedaling back toward the CES Detroit show.
You can't let it go, Todd.
No, I can't let it go. Well, I just wanted to say that there was. I found it interesting that GM made its announcement about the what do they call it, the Cruise AV, the fully autonomous car they plan to launch next year. They've applied with the U.S. Transportation Department to be able to deploy that, not for purchase, but as kind of a robo taxi to take people around town. That. You know, considering that they announced it right between CES and the Detroit Auto Show, I know that their big announcement on that Saturday was the Chevy Silverado pickup truck. But they should have had a concept version of that car to show, say, Tuesday at the auto show. That would have been the perfect time to do that.
And why not only do it at CES if CES is the place to go with news like that, too?
But see, I mean, I think that raises this would bring that sort of
everything about the timing is questionable.
Right.
That would bring that sort of thing to Detroit when Detroit along with LA and the other auto shows, are trying to change into this automobility thing and kind
yeah, but
of.
GM's not trying to help the Detroit show. They're trying to help themselves.
Of course.
So I mean, where was the best place for the bang for the buck in their view?
I'm not sure that choice. Would they have been top of the news at CES? Whereas.
No, I don't think so. I think it's a really interesting question you raise.
Yeah.
But they just sent out a news release and had like three sentences. And they just showed a picture of an interior buck.
Still, it would have been like, easy to put that interior.
There's a buck with no.
Yeah. No. There is a car. There is a car because I went to a party Friday night that GM held at the Rensen at its headquarters. They do a pre-party before the charity preview at the Detroit Auto Show.
Oh, right. And they had the buck there.
It's a good party too.
Yeah.
They had the bloody car there.
I would
really?
Love
yes,
to.
Yes, there. And that's what people were saying. It. What's it doing at the party? It should be over a Kobo.
Yeah. I mean, I presume it was probably basically a Chevy Bolt with that interior, right?
Yes, right. Yeah. And in fact, while we've been talking here, Joe Lazio wrote in to say, with all the talk of autonomous cars, you'd think that someone would build a concept car that takes advantage of the packaging that no longer requires a steering wheel or conventional dashboard.
Well, and a few have. Mercedes had the concept a couple of years ago. They showed it.
Giant vehicle.
Yeah. That was their concept vision or whatever. But it had a retractable steering wheel.
Oh, yeah.
And I was on a local program here Let It Rip, with Ed Welburn. And Ed, you know, who used to run GM Design, he says he can't wait. He's dying for somebody to give him a project to design the interior of an autonomous car. And he said, look, the Bolt without the steering wheel and all that, that's fine. But all you did was take an existing car and remove that stuff. You didn't design the car, as Joe Lazio writing in here says, take advantage of that packaging space.
Well, and some of the early design studies had no windows, and now we're finding out that all the research from apparently decades of motion study is that if people are moving around in a sealed box, everybody gets car sick because you can't look out at the horizon.
It'd be unpleasant, a whole sealed box full of people car sick.
Yeah. With no windows, right. But somebody, one of the universities or some, I'm catching up still on all my press releases. They've come up with a technology that uses some sort of light in the car to get. So if you're rearward facing, and that's where a lot of other people get car sick, you know, they're facing in the rear. But this gives you a horizon that your eye can focus on and give you relationship, blah, blah, blah. And they say it works wonderfully well in reducing car sickness.
I think this gets to the core of a bigger societal issue, and that's that. I don't have any kids, but I hear about how people with kids have to have rear seat entertainment systems for them that if they're not on those rear seat entertainment systems, they'll be constantly looking at their smartphones or whatever. Why don't you want to look out the window anymore? I mean, maybe every day you're going to the same place and you're going to see more or less the same thing, but you're going to see different people. Nobody wants to look outside anymore.
Yeah, and get off my lawn.
Yes. Okay, all right.
I mean, when you were on a family, when you were a kid on a family vacation, didn't you spend most of your time in the car with your nose buried in a book, though? Or was that just me? Okay, that was just me.
On a vacation, if I was going to a new place, I certainly wanted to see what was outside. Okay. I might have a book along, but I didn't have to read it for the entire drive.
Oh, man. I come from a big family, and we spent the whole time fighting.
There you go.
You're sitting on my part of the seat. No, I'm not. Move over. I wish we had those entertainment systems.
Your parents would.
When my kids were kids and when I was a kid.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm all for it.
All right. So we've been talking about all this autonomous stuff and CES stuff, but, okay, so there was that big auto show, and Mark, I know that you spent probably an inordinate amount of time at that show. Okay, so tell me what you saw that really impressed you in Detroit.
You got to just give a shout out to the 68 Bullish because it was the car in the movie that had been lost for 40 years and it's back, and there's a great family story to it. So there's that.
So this is the Steve McQueen car.
The car that Steve McQueen drove, still with
one of
the old.
Them, yep.
Still, actually, the other one I don't think he actually drove much, but it was used in the chase scenes.
In
but
the
anyway,
stunts.
Yeah, right. In the stunts, yeah.
So Ford brought that there because they're introducing a new bullet.
A new bullet. Yeah, and the new bullet is nice, but I mean, it's the fact of, the old one, and it's unrestored. It still has the old camera mounts welded underneath it. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, got tape notes on the inside that were to McQueen when he was driving. So I mean, that's fantastic. But I would say, to the point that I think Todd was making earlier, it was great to be at an auto show and see some actual concept vehicles, too.
So
because there's been a real dearth of good concept, far-out concept vehicles. The Lexus LF1, great-looking exterior design for a luxury SUV.
Nice proportions.
Small SUV.
Yeah, and I think when they said that it was, but they said it was a flagship, and I think they're kind of overselling it, because I think it clearly looks smaller than like a BMW X7 or an Audi Q8.
It's smaller than an RX, Lexus RX.
I understand it's basically more or less on a GS platform.
Yeah. Where was it designed? Was that out of Japan or out of Kelty? Okay, California.
And I got some...
Well, here we got a picture of it. And another thing, too, shirt. I got to say, the color is cool.
Yeah.
It's this copper, you know, peach, rosé, champagne combination that's really nice.
And in the picture, it looks longer, I think, than it is in reality.
Right. Well, but it has that long hood, almost a shooting brake look to it. I mean, you know, I just got back from the Buick Regal Tourx drive, and Mark's driving one, and, you know, it has those sorts of proportions. Now, the Tourx is really a wagon, but this is like a slightly raised wagon, mm-hmm. and, you know, I've got some hints that, you know, as like almost everybody else, Lexus needs to pare down its sedan lineup, and, you know, this could fit in between an IS and an LS with no need for a new GS, which they don't sell any of those, so...
So what other concepts, Mark?
The Infiniti Q Inspiration.
That was
is breathtaking.
Yes.
And it's a very nice interior. And it's got the most exciting new engine that was at the show, the Infiniti VX Turbo, VC. Turbo, a variable compression.
It had an engine in it.
Yeah. And there's a turbo, by God.
Yeah.
The VC turbo, a variable compression turbocharged engine that can run, the displacement can vary from something like 1.8 to 2.5 liters, something like that. Really dramatic. And compression ratios change. And the mechanical linkage to do it is fascinatingly weird
We need Frank Marcus to explain all that to us.
Yes.
But, and then there was the Nissan Cross
Motion.
Cross-motion.
The letter X and the word motion, but we must say it's the Cross Motion.
That's why you were looking for VX for an engine name. You're not used to a new thing not having an X in it.
Yes. So what did you think about? I mean, I was a little about the design of that vehicle.
The exterior I found very interesting because Nissan, I mean, they make the Rogue and they make the Murano.
Right.
And they understood the shift to SUVs and populated their lineup with a lot of them earlier than anybody else. So I think we have to take this style seriously as an idea of what they're thinking seriously about next in the next generation. The interior was just silly, I thought.
Well, and to your point, that's about the size of a Rogue. But then the question is, are people buying the crossover style SUVs because they want something that looks like an SUV, or are they buying them because they're more car-like? Are people really interested in something more rugged-looking just to say, hey, I've got an SUV? I don't know. I'm not sure.
That's the question. And will it be something that kind of cycles, like there are cycles in minivans, that for minivans go jelly bean, then they go more, you know, upright? Yes. Are SUVs, you know, going to go through that same kind of rotation?
Exactly.
So there's the bizarre-ish interior that is up there. So across the top of the IP is a long screen. So it's an entire screen there.
I think they had that. Oh, wait, which one is this?
That's the Cross Motion.
The Cross Motion. Okay. At CES, they had that same kind. They had a concept car. I don't know if it was the same concept cars.
It wasn't, because it was embargoed.
Okay.
This one was embargoed until the time of the release,
okay.
I believe. Yeah.
But anyway, one cool aspect of technology with that panorama of screens on the top of the dash is they're going to use augmented reality. So even if the road is completely covered in snow, the screens will show you exactly where the road is as if it were a sunny summer day. Hmm. And that's pretty cool technology, I think.
Especially,
which reminds me, the other, because there was some VC, you know, eyewash in the concept car, reminds me, I think the other big piece of news from Detroit was the GAC announcement that it will bring its first Chinese-built, Chinese-branded car.
Guangzhou Auto Company.
Yes, which uses the brand name in China of Trump Qi. No kidding, and they've had that name for 10 or 12 years or something like that. So presumably they'll come up with a new name, a new brand name for the U.S. Market, unless they just call it GAC. But they will bring a three-row SUV will be the first model, launching in the last quarter of 2019. And I talked to Michael Dunn about it, and he said, yes, they're very serious and that they do have they're getting the certification in motion to make sure that that vehicle can come to the U.S.
So it's a little issue of getting dealers first before they're
and for that. One model to that point. And so, but
they've got a joint venture in China with Fiat Chrysler.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, you know, that might be.
And Fiat dealers could certainly use another model, no matter what it is.
And,
you know,
and a number of others too. Honda being one of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, GAC builds cars for a bunch of, you know, Japanese, European, right, and American brand.
And to that point, there the execs from GAC also are attending the National Auto Dealers Association meeting. Ooh, this year, just to meet people.
Yeah. Hey, look, there's more that we can talk about at NAIAS, but we got to take a quick break right now because we got to give a shout out to our good friends at Bridgestone. Okay, we're back talking all things automotive. And we were talking about the Detroit Auto Show. One thing that caught my eye was that Acadie's engine on the floor. And what really caught my eye was that it was Aramco, the Saudi Arabian oil company, that bought exhibit space and put this engine in there with an F-150 mounted. It mounted in an F-150. And they're claiming they're going to get 37 miles to the gallon combined fuel economy with this thing.
And so this is the opposed piston engine, and we had David Johnson on the show here before. So, yeah, so it's basically an internal combustion engine with a different architecture than we're familiar with.
Right.
So making the argument that, you know, you don't need a hybrid, you don't need an EV, that you don't even need a diesel. You can do it, run it on gasoline. And
so there's a lot of skepticism out there. There's a picture of the engine.
It's just like an engine.
A lot of skepticism, but David told me, Gary, he's going to make this engine and that truck available for you and I to drive, and we'll bring it in the studio here. We'll do a whole show about it. But David also said, so I said, so is there any interest in it? He goes, oh, yeah, interest has really picked up. He said there's one big North American manufacturer that is showing a lot of interest. So I mentioned that GM party that I was at, the charity preview thing. I ran into, I'm blanking on his name now. Who's the VP of powertrain?
Sorry.
I'm blanking.
I can see his face and I can't think about it. But anyway, I asked him, Dan Nicholson?
Yes.
Yeah, Dan Nicholson. So I asked Dan, what do you think about the Acadie's engine? Long pause. It's interesting. So I asked, would you be interested in something like that? He said, it's interesting. So
they should be noted for what they did show in the Chevy Silverado, or talk about. They didn't show the engines exactly, but a new variable cylinder engine that can shut down from 8 cylinders to 1 cylinder. Or anything in between.
Is that the Delphi skip fire?
Yeah.
No. They said that it's a West Coast company that developed it.
Yeah.
And I forget who.
Yeah. You're right. But I believe Delphi bought that company I think Delphi owns the technology.
Not Aptiv?
Not Aptiv.
It'd be Delphi Technologies. That was the other company.
So okay, and also the inline six-cylinder diesel.
All right, okay.
Could I ask a question? Could you pronounce the name of this new engine again? Because I've never been clear on it.
Acadie's.
Thank you very
much. It looks like Achates.
Yeah, I always stumble over it.
I think Acadie's is some Greek mythological figure. Somebody in the chat room, look it up and let us know.
All right, so we've got these, you two here. Silverado Ram. What do you guys think? I mean, those are
fun.
Big introductions.
It's going to be a lot
people.
Of fun to watch.
So what do you think?
Well, I I've got a bet with some people that the 2018 model year Ram will outsell the Silverado. 2019.
So the new one.
Yes, the new one will outsell the new model year Silverado, largely just because it's going to be on sale 3 months earlier.
Okay.
There's another reason why. Because they are devoting an entirely new assembly plant to making Rams. It's not a new plant. What I'm saying, they converted the Sterling Heights plant that had been making the Chrysler 200. Now it's going to make Rams. So I figure 200,000, 220,000 additional sales. And Ram finished behind the Silverado roughly 100,000 units. So you're getting 200,000 more. So I'm saying it's got a shot, but GM's not sitting on its hands. It's retooling one of the Oshawa plants in Canada to start assembling trucks again. They should get another 60,000 Silverados.
And I think in the long run, I don't think Fiat Chrysler, they would love to be number one in pickup trucks, sure, but I think they'd be happy to be number three as long as the number goes up. They sold 500,000 last year. In the long term, it may be that Ram helps Chevrolet pass Ford in sales because they take away some Ford sales. They both have newer trucks.
That would be a dream. I mean, the delta between anybody else's.
Well, wait a minute. But let's say the delta between Chevy with GMC combined might be able to catch them.
And I think that's happened in the reasonably recent past.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it is two different brands.
And Chevy took 450 pounds out of the truck. Ram took something like, 225 or 275?
225, I believe.
225,
okay,
right.
So you brought up another good one. George from Sunnyvale wrote in to say, with the Silverado losing 450 pounds, could it be lighter than the F-150?
It could, because when the F-150 lost 700 pounds, that was 700 pounds off of what was already the heaviest truck among those three.
Right.
And so the difference, I don't know exactly what it is. You have to go truck by truck, all those different configurations. But I would think the Chevy could be lighter.
Yeah, and George, just so you know, too, GM or Chevrolet have not given us what the truck weighs. All they did was tell us how much weight they took out of it. They're saving to give us all the details later in the year.
Right. And by the way, since Gary mentioned, you looked at both of us about who's going to win this thing or which one we prefer, my gut reaction leans a little bit toward the Ram, in part because they did a better job on interiors.
The interiors.
Yeah. Chevy dropped the ball on interiors.
The other thing that...
Did they again, do you think? Because
of course, these are pre-production, yep. But...
And I was just fascinated by the amount of work that went into the bed on the Silverado. Yep. And it's amazing how much more useful that's going to be to people. But I barely looked at the inside of the Silverado, I have to admit.
It wasn't a huge disappointment, but it was a disappointment in that it didn't seem to move forward the way the Ram did.
I think, Todd, you're calling it a disappointment because the Ram was so good.
Yeah.
Spectacular interior.
And that massive touchscreen, too.
Right.
Which apparently was developed originally when they were thinking about a police pursuit version of the Charger. They wanted to have a full-size touchscreen so that they wouldn't have to do aftermarket mountings of laptops.
Yeah.
I would bet since, a week or two ago that Chevy interior designers are halfway to a refresh on that already.
Right. One other observation about the Ram. If you go back to, I think it was 1994 when they first started calling it Ram, and they were the first guys to go big, massive grill, blunt, flat front end, crosshairs in the grill. And now there's two grills on the Ram. There's sort of like the mainstream one, and then there's the Rebel. The Rebel still looks like the current truck. But if you look at the other grill, it's a lot smaller.
I agree. And
there's
that's
a
nice.
Lot more plan view, i.e. a lot more rounded front end.
They taper off the hood at the end there, and they say that they did a lot of things
for aero.
And I think that's a nice, refreshing flip on that thing. Let me say something, too, about mid-sized trucks, because Sergio Marchionne said at his annual Detroit Show roundtable, and this will be his last since he's going to be retiring from Fiat Chrysler, that they still can't do a business model for a new Dodge Dakota, or Ram Dakota, it would be called now. But those are lifestyle trucks, and they've got one coming. They've got the Jeep Scrambler.
I think that's why he's saying I can't do a business case.
Yeah.
Because then Ram would compete with Jeep. Jeep's perfect for that.
And he doesn't have to do a business case.
That's right.
He's got it already.
Yeah, right. Hey, we got a bunch of things. You guys want to run viewer mail that's come in here, comments and viewer mail. So let's see. S10 Baja, do we think Tesla is doomed?
Yes.
Yes and no.
Because of Elon's new
his
pay
stock. Well, yeah, set. But Wall Street analysts that I kind of skim and the one or two that I that I think are smart about it, one of them says Tesla is going to continue to lose money, but don't buy Tesla stock short.
Yeah,
because
don't short it.
Don't short it. The profits will. The losses will keep going up, and so will the stock value.
Okay, Barry Rector says, now that you've seen the three trucks from GM, Ford, and Ram, who's the leader in the truck wars?
Wow, I think technically there's a real strong shot for Silverado in terms of capability, fuel economy, everything.
I agree. I think the all aluminum body was a great idea at the time, but for the Ford F-150, which has been the leader for so long. But I think it's their position to lose, and I think they may lose it within a few years.
Mm-hmm. I don't think they will lose it in my working lifetime.
The sales position?
And I'm hoping not to be fired this year.
Nah.
at home.
Yeah.
So this past year they sold 897,000 F-Series trucks, and General Motors sold 586,000 Silverados.
Okay.
But Todd's point earlier.
Add the GMC.
Add the GMC, and that closes the gap.
And Ford will still be able to say we are the leader because it's by brand, no question.
Right.
But.
Okay.
But if you throw in the midsize pickups, then
GMC is a total is different. GM is a total, and midsize is different too. And how many Rangers will they sell? I mean, that's such a totally unknown question.
That's true.
It's going to be difficult because the midsize truck segment has doubled in size since GM got back into it. But last year it went up only 1%. In the last 3 months of last year, Honda Ridgeline sales dropped 25%. That's a big drop for what is essentially a new truck. And now Jeep's going to get in, Ford's getting in, Hyundai's going to get in. It's going to be
the Honda's an outlier because they did the same thing with the original Ridgeline and then settled in around 12,000 to 18,000 per year for the rest of that first-generation truck's life cycle.
Yeah, but they didn't do a new version of it to sell 18,000 a year.
Yeah, right.
You know, they were hoping for a sustainable 50 or 60.
Okay, related to this, Ray Mitrowitz asks, as all these trucks and off-roading body-on-frame vehicles are coming into view, what do you think about GM's decision to make the new Blazer a front-drive unibody crossover?
Well, that's basically going to be a Ford Edge competitor. That's what they're bringing the nameplate back for.
Yep.
And do they need a Bronco competitor? We won't know until we see how well the Ford Bronco does, but I would say probably not.
James Earl Moans wants to know, should I even attend the New York Auto Show?
Oh, New York's, I generally don't go because of a vacation conflict, but looking at the coverage, I think New York's generally a good show. There's always a fair amount of new vehicles being introduced, and I think there's going to be a pretty good showing by the luxury brands this year.
Yeah.
If you're not committed to the Jeep Easter Jamboree, yes, definitely go to the New York Auto Show.
Okay, Mac Ford Fan 98 tweeted this in. Have you guys driven or tested any newly released vehicles? Ford EcoSport? Any others?
Not the.
Well, you just got back from the Cross Tour.
Yeah, the Torx. Yeah.
Tour.
Believe me, I have trouble keeping all that straight too.
The Buick
Regal Torx, and I can talk about it. I think it's a perfectly nice executed, what they would like to call a crossover. I think they could have just called it Buick Sport Wagon. I think it's got nice proportions. It's smooth. It's quiet, relatively quiet. The 2-liter turbo engine is plenty powerful. It's not a driver's car by any means, but then again, neither is, say, the Volvo V90 Cross Country, and it's in that ilk for less money and certainly, you know, not as nice an interior.
Yeah, almost exactly the same size and almost 20 grand less. I happen to be driving
one, too. Here's a
picture
of it right now. Yeah.
Looks like a million. I think it looks better in your driveway than it does in photos, and I think it photographs well.
No, yeah. It does. It's a good-looking car.
I really like it. Tons of space, too.
Their demonstration for us was, if you want, try to put a mountain bike on top of this car. And, you know, that's the difference between, you know, the height of this is actually, I looked it up, is about the same height as a 1968 Buick Sportwagon. Something like 58 inches and change, and a Buick Enclave is 69 inches and change, and you lift a kayak up on top of that or a mountain bike or whatever, and there's a big difference in this thing. So there may be more sport in this sport utility and other vehicles like this. Now, the one thing I would like, I'm going to beat on my dead horse about how Buick should have had a rear drive car. And as good as those proportions are, they would have looked even better with rear drive, and it would have been a little more fun to drive.
Isn't that the Opel?
It is.
Yes.
It's the Opel
so
insignia.
So Buick really didn't design it, so.
No. And, well, I...
At that time, Buick design and Opel were pretty close.
Yeah, I mean,
linked.
Yeah. So now it's they have to rely on... They've got a contract with Peugeot Citroën to build it, but, you know, what happens after, let's say, a 5-year life cycle?
I think the contract for 3 years.
Yeah, that'd be what I'd guess. I drove one couple of hundred, about 250 miles yesterday to pick up a new puppy that I was adopting, and I loved the car. And I love the puppy. No picture of the puppy, sadly. But I'll be really interested when you drive one on the roads around here to see if you still think that about the quiet, because road noise is, I have very, very few quibbles with it at this point, but road noise is potentially one.
Good point. And I noticed, because we drove from Phoenix to Sedona and back, that in Phoenix on the rougher roads, it felt fairly stiff given that it's not... given that it's fairly soft in the corners.
And I'm surprised it doesn't have a driving mode selector, frankly.
The other thing is, do you have a pre-production or do you have a production car? So this is funny. Buick quiet tuning includes foam insulation on the tires. And the pre-production cars we drove don't have that foam insulation. The production cars, which they've already sold a few, the ones in the dealers should have those tires. Apparently they couldn't.
Ooh, because that would play to your comment about road noise.
I have to find out about that. Thank you. I will ask Buick about that.
Yeah,
and I'll check the VIN.
Yeah.
Usually you can tell without the insulation in the tires, and it's really a damping on the wheel, you can hear almost a ring. An echoing ring from the tires, if it doesn't
and
have
I, and I was thinking, there's some wind noise as well, but there was some stuff that I was definitely attributing to tire noise, which is probably that kind of thing. But I will definitely try to find that out. Thank you for mentioning it.
And then, speaking of, because he asked about, have you driven anything, you guys just got back from driving the redesign of the Cherokee.
Can't comment on it.
Oh, we had a piece of Online Daily today. You can't do driving impressions.
Which I can't say.
Okay.
That's embargoed.
Embargoed. Yeah. It looks nice.
Okay. Okay.
New headlamp.
New front fascia. Yeah. It's got a new rear fascia.
Sure.
It's.
I will take a moment of the time that Gary could have spoken about that to say that the reason that I've got the Tour X here in Detroit is because I'm testing GM's Marketplace e-commerce app, which makes it easy for you to do things with Priceline, you know, book hotels on your route, have an order waiting for you at Dunkin' Donuts, you know, that kind of thing. And it's very early, so they don't have many apps yet. But you can see a pathway to that being a really useful service as they add more features.
To get back to my get off my lawn type comments, do we really need that? Do we really need so much of that? I can see, okay, you know, having your coffee ready when you arrive at Starbucks, but I can't stand Starbucks, so, you know.
That's why it's Dunkin' Donuts, right?
They're adding Starbucks as well, but Dunkin' Donuts is the one that's working now.
We got more stuff. Jose D. says, these old farts are complaining about where to cut the power to the car. LOL, bunch of morons. Fire department has the documents for every model. I know this because I work at a fire department. Manufacturers give books on every car, including Tesla. Okay, Jose, prove it. Prove it to me. Fax me a copy. Fax me a copy on the Tesla Model 3. And I'll give you our fax number right now. Get a pencil out. Give you a moment. 734-542-7014. Fax me it. And if it's true, we'll be talking about this next week. I'll bet you can't do it. But prove me wrong. Okay. We also got a phone call here. Let's bring that one in.
Hey, guys. Great show. I got a question for you. Now that GAX at the Detroit Auto Show and Chinese manufacturers are going to begin to ship products to America, how come we aren't putting a tariff on their cars shipping into the U.S. of 25% from China, like China charges a 25% tariff for American-built vehicles being shipped to China? Anyways, great show. By the way, the Corvette C8 CAD drawing show a dual clutch transmission and an LT1, LT4 derivative in the CAD drawings that are all over the internet. Just heads up for next year's Detroit show. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for that, Jonathan. Much appreciated.
Tariffs. I guess the Trump administration wants to renegotiate those. The other side of that coin is that, you know, that would obviously add a great size tariff to the Buick and Envision.
And the Volvo S90, I believe.
Yeah.
But it gets even more than that. It's basic, you know, philosophy. You know, U.S. you know, economic philosophy is that we don't believe in really high tariffs. All cars brought in get a 2.5% tariff on them. So China pays the same as a car from Germany, basically.
Yeah.
And I mean, they could, if they wanted to, slap a higher one on China. But you know, we do so much business with China that I think they would have a hard time getting that through Congress.
Well, cars are so much costlier there to begin with.
This week, yeah. So. And that was like 25%.
Well, number one.
At any rate, Ford's not going to move Focus production back to Mexico and then back to the U.S. if that happens.
I kind of agree with Jonathan, but just to clear up a few things here, we do charge an import tariff on every car that comes into this country of 2.5%, not the 25% that China charges. But we do charge a 25% tariff on every truck, which is why we don't import any trucks and why the big three are still in business, because they make all their profit on their trucks. So I'm kind of with you, though. China forces every automaker to find a Chinese partner if they want to build cars in China. Otherwise, you face the 25% import tariff. And I'm kind of a free trade guy, but I'm also in favor of reciprocity. If a country's taking an advantage of you, say, hey, great idea, guys. You charge 25%, so will we. You want to partner with a manufacturer, so do we. We're going to borrow your rules and apply them here. I don't see why there's anything wrong with that. I really don't.
Well, I don't think we have to worry about Chinese cars flooding this market for anytime.
At least 3 years.
Well, you know.
No, I mean the you know, the stuff that Guangzhou Auto had on their stand, none of it looked competitive. The current version of the GS8, and it's the next generation apparently they're going to bring here, looked like you couldn't give it away if your people were comparing it to a Ford Explorer or a Toyota Highlander. But I think we underestimate them at our peril.
Totally agree, Mark. And so I ran into Hao Taitang, head of product development and purchasing at Ford, and we were right at the GAC stand where you could see, which was right across the aisle from GMC. So GMC, GAC, one letter apart. And he pointed out the big three-row SUV in the GAC stand and then pointed to one at the GMC stand and said the Chinese one's going to be $5,000 cheaper. So to your point. Don't underestimate them.
I would be worried most if I were Mitsubishi, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, which has kind of rebuilt its business in the U.S. From 25,000 units a few years ago to about 100,000 last year, basically on the Outlander and Outlander Sport.
Okay, two more questions. Scott in Cleveland says, have any of you ever attended the Detroit Auto Show during public days?
Yes.
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 Yes. Yeah.
Never again, along with CES. No Detroit public days, no CES. That's my rule.
Too jam-packed.
Last year was my, I think, third time in 22 years because Ford with this Mustang thing had us come down on the
Tuesday of public days.
Yeah. Right.
Sorry.
It was awful.
And I'll say, I don't go to public days very often, but I love going on public days because in the media days, we're all so snarky and cynical. It's like, oh, look, you know, they blew this here and, you know, they should have sold more exhibit space there.
Yeah.
You go to the public days and, man, the buzz is so good. Everybody's so happy. They're so cheerful. I like going to the public days, but it's not every year.
Well, but I get spoiled because, you know, there's so much more. Even though there's a huge crowd around each press conference as it happens, you can walk around the whole press floor and you have a vehicle to yourself 20 minutes later.
Yeah.
And we get really spoiled during press days. But that's not to say that the public days are not, you know, the best day of the week for a lot of people who go there.
Yeah. I agree. And obviously
and
people keep showing up and I just don't. I hope Detroit doesn't turn into a Chicago where it's mostly a public show. We have some things to see in Chicago, but it's very quiet compared with Detroit. I'd like for Detroit to still be the premier U.S. show.
Okay, one last question comes in from our friend and colleague John Warniak, who's the vice president of vehicle technology for SEMA. He says, what's going to be the impact of ADAS, all these advanced driver assist things? What's going to be the impact of ADAS and autonomous technology on the performance aftermarket?
That's a brilliant
question. That should be our question to him, I think.
Yeah.
Well,
autonomous was going to, you know, autonomy is not about performance. You know, autonomy is going to be about comfort, I think.
Yeah. But they're not mutually incompatible either.
Correct.
I mean, you know, vehicles that have all the assistance systems and all the future autonomy, there will be Porsches built that have all of that, and then you will be able to drive it like a Porsche.
Yeah.
But how the two, how performance is improved or amplified by those, I haven't given it much thought.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking of like the Bliss, the blind spot systems on the Autobahn when you're in the middle lane, and Porsche is coming at you from the left lane at 155 or something like that. Maybe you need a better Bliss or something. I don't know.
Well, and it could be just like, you know, other driving systems, you know, adapt to your style. It could be that some of the features that are built into the driver assistance systems will also adapt to your style. And I would guess that autonomous systems will allow for some level of tailoring for how closely do you want to follow and things like that also.
Hey, I just got a message from the control room. Jose did send a PDF, so we don't have time to check it out now, but thank you for doing so, Jose, and you may prove me wrong, and I will eat humble crow here on the program next week, if it's true. But anything else, or we should wrap this up?
I'm good.
We've solved all the world's automotive problems, I think. Time to go home.
Or a good chunk of them. Well, good. Well, Gary, we're going to do this next week.
Indeed. Good chunk next week, too.
Okay. Thanks, everybody, for having tuned in.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion. And by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday afternoons. Get your daily fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.